And welcome back to the First Cut Podcast with Kyle Porter here on CBS Sports. That's Kyle Porter. I'm Chip Patterson. Busy week ahead. Kyle's going to be on the road going to the PGA Merchandise Show in Orlando. We're going to be able to bring you some highlights from that later in the week. We got the Desert Classic to wrap up. We've got Tiger Woods making his 2019 debut coming up this weekend out in Torrey Pines. But first, did your heart break? We spend a lot of time. We do a lot of hand-wringing about Phil Mickelson on this show. He shoots a 60 on the first round. He backs it up. He continues. He carries a 54-hole lead into Sunday, but falls short to Adam Long, who held off both Lefty and Adam Hadwin at the Desert Classic. His first career win, I'm guessing?
Yeah. It was his sixth career start on the PGA Tour. Phil came in to this tournament with as many major wins as Adam Long had PGA Tour starts.
Major wins. That's major wins.
major wins. And I mean, it's crazy because you think about guys like this. So he's a PGA Tour rookie at the age of 31. And when you think about a guy like that, you're like, okay, well, maybe he won on a mini tour. Maybe he got a win somewhere on the web.com tour. He hasn't won as a professional. He played the McKinsey Tour. He played PGA Tour Latino America. He played the web.com for like five or six years.
Whoa.
And this was his first win. And not only did it come at a PGA Tour event, it came at a PGA Tour event with Phil in the final group.
To be going down the stretch against Phil Mickelson and to win that battle. And granted, like, Lefty was out of gas, right?
Yeah, it was weird because I don't know if he was. Like, the thing for me on Sunday was he hit the ball beautifully. And it's almost like, and he kind of said this earlier in the week. He's like, well, I was kind of rusty. I was, you know, just maybe taking a little bit off with the driver. And it's like, well, maybe you should do that more often because you're like in the middle of every fairway. He hit 17 of 18 greens on Sunday.
Jeez. And
I get that this is not, you know, the hardest event or the hardest course, but he was awesome from tee to green, and then he only made 46 feet of putts, which is just it's not good. And he almost saved it at the end with a really impressive like last four or five holes, but he had so many opportunities that he kind of let go by the wayside early on in the final round. And you know, I just it was weird because I expected if Phil didn't win, there was no point throughout the day where I was like, well, I bet Adam Long takes this.
Right. We thought it was going to be Hadwin because we were trying to figure out what our recording schedule was going to be. And at that moment in the tournament, I was like, oh, man, so, you know, Lefty's lost this. Looks like Adam Hadwin's going to cruise. The Canadian is a world-class kind of player. Makes sense that he would step up into the spotlight here. But Long went and took it from him, too.
Yeah. And then the coolest part for me, Chip, was so you get to the final green, and Phil almost makes a 40-footer, which would have been hilarious. Hadwin almost holds out from the bunker. And then Long's got this 14-footer, and you're like, well, there's no way he's going to make this. Not with – I mean, it's one thing to do it for 17 holes, but on the 18th hole with Phil staring at you, $1.1 million on the other side of this putt, it's just – it's not going to happen, right? And he just buries it. And everybody's looking around like, I don't know who was more stunned. Phil was stunned. Adam Long was stunned. He had no idea what he'd just done.
Right.
His wife was stunned. I mean, the whole thing was just, it was surreal. It really was. And it was cool. I was talking to my wife about this, and she was like, you know, I kind of like these events that are not kind of the heart of the season because it gives guys like this an opportunity. I mean, that win changes his life.
Agree.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
He had made $600,000 over the last 7 years, and he almost doubled that in one day.
With a badass putt going in up against a six-time major champion Hall of Famer.
Yeah, and not only that, but he gets in all these events. He gets his card for the next 3 years or three seasons. For Phil, winning that, it doesn't change anything. Doesn't change his legacy. Barely changes his bank account. Whatever. But for Adam Long to win it changes his life. And that that kind of stuff is, I don't know. I think it's pretty cool.
Actually, Phil's bank account's all good. He had both road underdogs on the money line, and he had the under in Eagles Saints, and he had the over in Chiefs Pats. So he went 4-for-4.
He definitely had both games go to overtime at 85-1.
Right. all right. Well, what about you? You mentioned the whether he made the putt, whether he won or didn't, the quality of play and the excitement that he brought to the beginning of this tournament. How much can we take away? Because I'm inclined to maybe shelf some of my concerns, and we've addressed Phil Mickelson and what to expect from him on a regular basis and in the future and in 2019 a lot on this podcast. So has his performance at the Desert Classic changed at all sort of the way that you're mapping out the way his 2019 year might go?
Dude, golf is so stupid.
I need to clip that.
Phil ends 2018 just kind of just sluggish and just not really doing anything. And then he comes in this week and he's like, well, I haven't, worked on my game as much as I would like. And then he shoots a 60 and you're like, why do we even try to figure this stuff out? It's just so dumb. It doesn't make any sense. I thought this would be the year, and I'm not totally convinced that it's still not going to be the year that Phil, really took a step or a couple steps back from where he's been over the course of his career. But I don't know. It was a great performance. It wasn't just like, okay, he shot a 60 and then he backed it up with a couple of 72s or 73s or whatever. He backed it up with 66s and then almost won the tournament on Sunday. And I know it's not the greatest field, but I don't know what to do with this performance, because it was really impressive and it was really good. Maybe guys should just not practice as much.
Well,
I don't know. It seems like you just get into these events and guys Rory did this at Tournament of Champions. He's like, well, I've been playing as much as usual, and he's just lights out.
I think it's because we're talking about generationally great golfers in these two examples, and that's that where when it is, and not only that, but let me make sure that I don't step in it here. But you know how we've introduced the idea that what if Rory's already peaked? We've already seen peak Rory. We have 100% already seen peak Phil, right?
Right.
100% agree on that. And I think that only players of that caliber can duck what we normally look at as, not entirely linear trajectories, but at least the idea that you would be building up and that you would need to put together these kinds of performances to be able to have this kind of result. And I think that when you are one of these generationally great golfers who maybe has already put together their peak play for their game, then you can tap back into it. And it's not until you reach that echelon, until you hit your peak, that you're going to be able to go back into your bag like that. But I think that Phil Mickelson is absolutely capable. And I wonder if this is almost good for nothing else, just for Phil, just to be able to see these kinds of scores, to be able to see these kinds of numbers. And, if not that, he would ever need trouble focusing him up or getting himself in the right headspace for Augusta or for Pebble later this year. But just in general, in terms of his approach to the game and his approach to the season, I've got to think that there was just a lot of positives, and that in and of itself could power just a little bit better play than what I was expecting from him.
Okay, so two things on that. One, do you think Phil had some sort of parlay bet on his final round score against the Pats Chiefs total, the total number there?
So the number there was 56.5. So I don't know what the plus minus.
well, but I'm saying they scored 68 total.
Yeah,
and he shot a 69. There was money definitely exchanged hands
over that.
In some way there, but I like where you're going with that, and I think that here's what I think Phil should do. I think he should play 12 events,
right,
or 13 events, And he almost
And for comparison's sake, what does he play, like 16, 17?
No, he plays like 20.
Wow.
He plays a lot. He almost plays, I don't know if that's the right number. We could look it up, but he plays a lot, and he plays more than somebody his age and of his stature you would think they would play. And you know, maybe we're gonna see that. He's skipping Torrey this week. He's not playing for the first time in like 29 years or something. He's not playing Riviera, and he's dialing it back. Maybe he is just gonna play 12 or 13 events, because I think that if you're Phil and you only play 12 or 13, I just think he gets so tired by the end of the year.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe we see some, and because this is when we saw it last year, we saw flashes. He remember that stretch that like 4 or 5 week stretch last year where he was just awesome, and then he finally won in Mexico. He almost won like Phoenix. He almost won Pebble.
Oh yeah,
or he at least contended at those, and then he ended up winning. I want to see that consistently at a high level throughout the year, and not just in February and March.
Good call. Before we do get to looking ahead to Torrey Pines this weekend, a couple other stars. John Rahm, compared to what Phil Mickelson was doing on the course, seemed like his storyline flew below the radar a little bit. What did you see out of the big booty Spaniard?
I love that you call him that.
I don't know if that's going to stick, but as somebody who is a big fan of the tight end Algie Crumpler, I don't know if you remember him. But yeah, just I like that thick I like that thick backside and what it does for athleticism.
So I'm doing this thing. I probably shouldn't mention that. I'm doing a sit down deal for a prominent television network previewing the Masters, and like there's a bunch of us doing different players, and Rahm is one of my guys. I should definitely toss that in, right?
Absolutely. As Chip Patterson likes to call him, the big booty Spaniard. Because then it's all on my plate, right? Then you're laying it on me.
You're going to be watching Masters preview coverage and be like, oh, wow, that's great. Awesome.
but he finished sixth. Like, pretty good?
It was weird because he finished sixth, and like, I don't feel like I saw him on Sunday. I mean, they showed him a little bit, but he was always he was like consistently five back throughout the day, and it's almost like at an event like this where the winning score is 26 under, you have to have the round that's like 63, right?
Or yeah, 60,
because you're not going to shoot 4 65s in a row. It's just really hard to do that consistently over four rounds. So you have to throw in the 60 like Phil did. I think Hadwin shot a 63 one day, and he just didn't have that. But he played really well. The guy that more disappointed me was Justin Rose.
Did he make? Was, T34,
and he didn't hit the ball well. Mm. And you know, I don't want to overreact to one event, but the switch in iron. So he goes from TaylorMade to Hanma, or whatever it's called. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but you always have a grace period when you're switching up your bag, switching up your clubs. I always get nervous when like guys that are number one in the world are switching everything up. You're like, is that a great idea? And I get it. Like there's money involved and whatever, but that's going to be an interesting, I think, early season storyline for Justin Rose.
Over at Abu Dhabi, it was Shane Lowry who took it. Louis comes in with a top five finish. Ian Poulter up in the top 10. Brooks Koepka at T9. We also had our eyes on Dustin Johnson. He finishes T16, about 9 strokes off the pace. Any headlines coming from that tournament?
I thought Lowry was obviously great. I really like him. He's just a fun player. I feel like not all of them, but a lot of the European guys are just fun. You know, they're fun to watch. They play more. They're not all like this. I just feel like they play more old school golf. Like they're not like you watch these young guys on the PGA Tour and they all look the same. They all look like Kevin Tway.
You know? Yeah.
They're all like jacked and just hit it straight. And I know that sounds dumb to not like that, but I think a lot more of the European guys are shot shapers, and they're not all, you know, cut and 160 pounds, just, you know, loaded up, which makes it, I don't know, it's kind of endearing. It's kind of fun, and they're obviously really great players. And I mean, I was thinking about something that you said last week. This stood out to me that you pointed this out. We don't look back. We're not going to look back on the Desert Classic after Adam Long contends at like the PGA Championship and be like, "Oh, that was when it started." That was it. Well, we might with him, but we wouldn't do that with Phil or Adam Hadwin or somebody like that. But we do reference the early season European events. We mm-hmm. really do. And so if Shane Lowry goes on to have a good year on when he comes over to the PGA Tour and plays the PGA Tour events, I think it's easy to point back to that and be like, yeah, you know, that was kind of an inflection point for him. So great win for him. Exciting final round between him and Richard Stern. I don't know how to pronounce anybody's name. It was good.
The European Tour still killing it with the viral videos. The Tommy Fleetwood content meeting.
That was awesome. Okay, did you watch that?
Yes, I watched the whole thing. It was incredible.
It was so good. I don't understand how those guys are like really good at that stuff.
Why don't you understand that?
Well, Stinson, Stinson's like legitimately awesome at it.
And Eddie Pepperell's a stud.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like the he really brings the extra flair to that group, because we were looking at the table, because Thomas Bjorn's like kind of like funny and sort of there is the like wise, right? Isn't he sort of playing a little more of a B team? I would say our top billing was that Tommy Fleetwood, Henrik Stenson, Eddie Pepperell, like they were the three amigos from a comedy perspective.
Yeah, Westwood and Bjorn are definitely into it, but they just don't have the
presence. Yeah, they like legitimately there is good camera presence and acting skills from Pepperell, Stenson, and Fleetwood. It's incredible.
It really is incredible. And props to the European Tour for they just keep cranking out awesome stuff. It's really cool. And I think it's so interesting because we only talk about this during the Ryder Cup for whatever reason, but there's such a camaraderie on the European Tour. It's hard for me to imagine the PGA Tour getting Dustin Johnson and Jason Day and I don't know, Justin Thomas in a room to like do this like funny skit, like Saturday Night Live like skit.
Yeah, I've got a theory. Like,
I just can't imagine it. Can you?
My theory is that Golf Boys ruined it. I think that they had one shot and it was just the wrong time. It was the wrong time. It didn't hit in quite, or maybe just like the way that we thought about viral videos or viral campaigns was just a little bit different. But I just think that Golf Boys so quickly became something that was like not celebrated as much as it was mocked.
Yeah. But I also think that there's a fine line between like the European Tour doesn't do a lot of content, but everything they do is awesome.
Right.
And there's, you know, there's, I think the PGA Tour just like wants to like, what are our numbers? You know, how much are we producing? How much stuff are we putting out there? And when you do that, it gets really difficult to produce high quality stuff.
I'm not going to go deep on an entire quality over quantity content discussion now for fear of my own livelihood.
By the way, Phil last year, 24 events.
Wow.
Phil in 2017, 22, 2016, 22. He played 19 in 2015, 21, 21, 22, 21. So he's consistently over 20, which is, it's a lot for him.
It's a lot. All right. We will turn our attention to Torrey Pines right after this.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Tiger back, baby. He's back.
Let's go. It's a great field.
And what, Rory playing too?
Rory, Ricky, Rose, Rahm, Jason Day.
When are you going to do your expert picks and everything?
Pending allergies. Expert picks come out on, I'm writing them on Monday. I think they come out on Tuesday.
And then you'll be in Orlando until when?
Yeah, so I'm going to the PGA Merchandise Show from Tuesday to Friday. Friday. So I come back Friday afternoon. It's kind of a weird week because you've got a lot of people in the golf industry like just hanging out in Orlando, and then you've got Tiger like across the country
in California.
Yeah, and like this great event, you know, the first CBS event of the year. You know, we always joke about how there's like three opening days to a PGA Tour season. It's like the Safeway Open, which is a fake opening day, the Tournament of Champions, which is sort of opening day, and then Torrey Pines, which is the first network event, usually the first time Tiger plays, which feels like the real opening day.
Right.
It's going to be obviously a great field, probably the best field other than maybe even a better field than the Tournament of Champions. I'm excited about it. About Rory playing.
Well, all right. So this is there are five events in the California swing?
But I think Phoenix, so it goes Desert Classic, it goes Torrey, it goes Phoenix, Pebble, and then Riviera. And
that's
then
right.
I think Mexico is after that.
Got it. When we are looking at the Tiger Woods angle to this is going to be like very, very intensely focused on breaking down every little bit. And so how are you preparing yourself? Because I think about the radio hits or the CBS Sports HQ hits. I am preparing myself for whatever contributions. Yeah, come holler at your boy on that Thursday, Friday live blog, CBSSports.com, running it all day. I'm very much prepared for like if he could have a very just average putting day and the questions are going to be like, so, I mean, Tiger can't get his putter under control, right, Chip?
I know.
And we're just going to pick apart every tiny thing. And that's why I almost, you know, I didn't want to dissuade anyone from following our incredible coverage, but I'm just sort of preparing myself to already want to pump the brakes on anything. Like if he doesn't have a good day driving, then he didn't have a good day driving. Like it's just, I really want to preach patience with our analysis of Tiger Woods here in the first event of 2019.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Obviously, I always agree with that sentiment, especially within golf. But I think the interesting part here, and this is sort of what I've been talking about on HQ over the last week or so, because we always start our Tiger coverage like 2 weeks in advance.
I know.
Is he finished top 25 in this event last year, and he came in. I mean, it was a very ambiguous. There was a lot of ambiguity around him coming in, right? Because we saw him at the Hero in 17. And you're like, well, it's, you know, the fairways are like 900 yards wide. And what do I make of that? And then he makes the cut by a shot. And then he finishes top 25. He didn't contend, but he's just, his ability and his history at this place is so ingrained that it's almost like if he doesn't make the cut and if he doesn't have at least I don't need him to top five. But if he misses the cut, you're like, okay, I mean, maybe that's something. You know, it's not like, oh, Tiger's going to have a terrible year, but I don't think it's nothing just because of his history here and even what he did last year, coming in with off the fourth back surgery and playing pretty well.
Tiger Woods' worst score at Torrey Pines this coming weekend, over under 73.5.
It's so dependent on the wind. And remember that year that Snedeker won, and there was like half the field shot in the 80s.
No, but I'm gonna have to go look it up now as part of my preparation.
He won on a Monday, and it was this weird thing where, I mean, I think he won it like over par. He shot like a, but it was like one of the rounds of the year because he shot like a 69, and that the field average was like 70. It was legitimately 79 or 80.
PGA Tour win over par.
What'd you say, 73 and a half?
73 and a half.
I'll say his highest score is under.
Under, is yes. Under that. Yeah, because I was thinking out loud, and honestly, man, like, just because of the positioning of this tournament and, you know, other responsibilities that it'll include, that include college football and college basketball, like, my institutional knowledge of this event is a little bit shallow. So I'm going to go back and I'm going to have to go see some highlights of this Sneds and the Wind win right there. But I was wondering if, and let's see, it's first professional win for Tiger Woods was here, correct?
First professional win was at Milwaukee, I think.
Oh.
Or that was his first start. His first, I can't remember his first win.
But he's got multiple wins at Torrey Pines.
Yeah, he's got eight. So he's got seven.
Okay, all right, yes.
He's got seven Farmers Insurance Opens and then the U.S. Open in 08. His first professional win was Las Vegas in 96. His first professional start was Milwaukee in 96.
So
he won five tournaments in.
I was wondering if just based on Tiger's history and his comfort and his institutional knowledge of the course, I was wondering if that is where we should set the bar. Like, yes, he might not be able to have it. And we saw during 2018 times where Tiger is just out there grinding and he's hitting some awesome shots, but he's hitting awesome shots to be able to avoid a bad score. Like he's pulling himself out after making mistakes, and that is where we're seeing the greatness, but it's not consistent enough that he's pushing the score real low. I think that it is reasonable to expect that he won't be posting a 75. And that was, I think, where I was going with that. It's the idea that what are the expectations? Well, he might not, you know, be excellent, but we definitely should not expect him to be poor in terms of his performance at Torrey Pines.
Yeah, even last year he shot he didn't shoot anything over 72.
Wow.
And that was, I mean, think about last year. Like, he talked about he didn't have a swing for the first half of the year and all this different stuff. And you're like, if that's the, I don't know, if that's the baseline, then it shouldn't be worse than that.
Right.
I guess is what I'm saying.
Okay, so what about the rest of the field?
By the way, so 2016, Snedeker shoots 69 in the final round. Second place was KJ Choi. He shot a 76.
Holy cow.
Nobody else. Dustin Johnson shot an 80. Ben Crane shot an 81. I mean, Scott Brown shot an 87. I think he was in the final group, as I remember.
Goodness.
Angel Cabrera, 84. Brian Harman, 86. I mean, it was a bloodbath. It was awesome.
So this was recent.
Yeah, it was 16.
All right.
And it was, I can't, there was something weird. Like, they finished on a Monday, and so I think that maybe Snedeker played some of his round not in the worst conditions. I don't know. The whole thing was bizarre. But, yeah, rest of the field, I mean, I'm fascinated to see Rory there because it's going to be, it's going to be a lot different than he talked about his driver a lot at Tournament of Champions and how he wants to hit more fairways. He wants more accuracy off the tee. And that's easy to talk about at a place like Kapalua because, again, it's like Hero World Challenge with fairways. It's going to be a little different at Torrey Pines. I'm interested to see if he uses that sort of stinger cut driver that we saw at Kapalua because that was awesome. And this is a place where he could, I think, hit that a lot. Ricky's 2019 debut, Rose bouncing back from what was, you know, Rose came into Desert Classic last week, 14 of 15 top 10s worldwide, and finished outside the top 30 in a pretty weak field. So I'm interested to see how he does. I can't remember, is DJ playing this week?
I know that he was in Abu Dhabi, so that's quite a turnaround.
Yeah. Let's see here.
See, I wonder if Justin Rose, that excellence that we saw over a window, I wonder if that window is going to close. And not necessarily all because of Justin Rose, but just that he can't be, like, the golf is too good right now, and Justin Rose is at a point in his career where to expect him to be contending for that number one spot in the world over a, like a 2-year run, I think would be a little aggressive. And I wonder if that is not predicting anything based on his level of play, but especially with the result this week at the Desert Classic, I'm just going to go ahead and throw that into the conversation that maybe we end up drawing brackets on this recent run by Rose, and we're like, all right, that was kind of his moment, like that was him during this particular era, sticking his head up, grabbing the flag, but then it's just going to be really, really tough for him to hold on to it.
Well, and I think the point there is that when you're at that level, when there's like 10 guys that could be number one in the world pretty easily, and it's so competitive and it's so hard to stay up there, any shift in any of the variables that go into what you do can affect that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so if you're changing clubs in the middle of that, and again, like I think people like overreact to club changes because I don't know, whatever, these guys are so good, but it, even like a minor thing like that, I think can affect your sort of longer term trajectory. So I really do think that's an interesting kind of sub storyline, because here's the thing, Chip, like, Rose has been awesome at the Masters for the last 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. And so I think that he's one of the guys that isn't being talked about, since we're already talking about the Masters. He's not really being talked about as somebody who either can or should win it. But I really think he's one of those guys. But if this equipment change affects him, then all of a sudden he gets bumped off of that. And you're looking at, you know, maybe you put a Brooks Koepka in there or a Justin Thomas or somebody like that. So I like where you're going with that, and I think it could be a real thing. But so much of it is retroactive. Like we have no idea how it's going to play out over the next 6 months or, you know, 2 years.
No, not at all. I think that's part of the fun, though, is that we are getting a chance to see this battle play out in real time. And by getting to comment on it, I hope that here on this podcast, our listeners get to see that we are as intrigued as you are to see what's going to happen.
Yeah, totally.
Do you have your picks to win yet?
No, I don't. I haven't. I know that's great content here. I'm still reeling. The listeners get what they get.
Listen, yeah. I want to hear what you at least are thinking about it.
I don't know. I might go Rom. I picked Rose last week. It was between Rom and Rose for me last week. Obviously, Rom won here in, was it 17, I think?
Yeah.
He's just playing so well right now. He's playing at such a high level so consistently. I might go with him, but I don't know yet. I think, yeah, I'll have to dive into it a little more. But that would be like my off the top of my head pick.
Okay. I'm going to go Rory.
Wow.
Let's go.
Is this the place for him, though?
No, not at all.
What a rough. What a not super wide fairways.
But if he comes out and just dusts everyone, what a great curveball for the season.
Yeah.
We've been so comfortable with Rory as a reoccurring character. He has not been the when's the last tournament where it felt like Rory's been the top billed star in terms of the way that we're talking about it, in terms of who's in contention to win?
I know it does feel like he's been just sort of relegated to I don't mean this negatively, but just kind of one of the guys, right?
I mean, if this is a sitcom, Rory just comes in the door and then everybody cheers because Rory's back. But Rory is not where the camera starts and finishes scenes.
Yeah. yeah. Do you think that the only way for him, I don't know, maybe this is unfair. Do you think the formula for him right now is, okay, so he shoots a 65 on Thursday on the North course, and then maybe like a 69 on Friday on the South, and he's leading by like three, and then he backs it up on the South on Saturday. He's up four going into Sunday, and then just kind of like defends it coming home. Is that the formula for him right now? Because I feel like he gets into these positions where he's one back or he's tied or whatever, and then he just doesn't have it on Sunday. And I'm curious to see what would happen if it was flipped to where he was like very much in control of an event, because it's been a while since we've seen that. We haven't seen him.
Well, you're describing Tiger style.
Yeah, I am. And we haven't seen, I mean, we saw that a lot from Rory earlier in his career, whether it was the PGA in, what was it, 12, the US Open, obviously, in 11. We saw a lot of different kind of iterations of that where he was just lights out the first couple of days. It was almost the Martin Keimer at Pinehurst thing. And you're like, well, this thing's over. I mean, this is a wrap. Like, why am I even covering the last 2 days? And I'm wondering if that's the formula for him right now to maybe get him not back on track, but just kind of more as like that top build guy that you're talking about.
Anything else from the notebook that you're excited about?
No. I think that's it. By the way, Bryson's skipping out on PGA Tour. He's going Dubai this week.
Wow.
He sees that Dubai Augusta stat and he's just all over it.
What's the Dubai Augusta stat?
The Dubai Augusta is that Danny Willett won there in 16, won the Masters in 16. Sergio won there in 17, won the Masters in 17. And then Rory should have won there in 18 and probably, well, not should have, but could have won the Masters in 18. Yeah. So Bryson's going in as the favorite there. He's looking at lapping the field and then just taking home the green jacket in a couple months. Bryson's like a real contender at Augusta.
Yes, of course Bryson's a real contender at Augusta. It's just not the it's not the winner that I'm ready for.
I cannot wait until he's breaking down the air density at Amen Corner on Sunday, and it's like, bro, this is Sunday at Augusta. There it doesn't exist. Like, there is no air density.
That is like that. Yes, I'm the other side of his scientific analytical world is like the mystical, the spiritual, like everything that is about Augusta cannot be calculated in a TI-83. So
I've been joking with because my friends will come up, what's up with Tiger, what's up with Spieth, you know. I'm like, I don't know, you tell me, I have no idea. And I've been joking with people that I talk to, like, Spieth's definitely gonna win the Masters this year after the last year and a half of just like being in his head and just what's the deal. Like, I just it would be very apropos if he won Augusta.
I'm all in. Spieth's gonna win. Let's go.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
All right, he is Kyle Porter. You can follow him on Twitter at Kyle Porter CBS. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Kyle, thank you very much.
Thanks, Chip.